Good morning. This is Priest of Aphrodite, just running a mic check. I'm going to read a little bit from my favorite book of Women's Anatomy of Arousal by Sherry Winston. This series is about language and the language we use. From Chapter 2. Our language for talking about sex and bodies speaks legions about our cultural shame and confusion. Embarrassment and awkwardness lurk just beneath the surface of our terminology. As I pointed out in Chapter 1, our mainstream culture gives us 4 inadequate vocabularies: clinical language, baby talk, vague euphemisms, and so-called dirty words. We don't have a straightforward, comfortable language for discussing this all-important subject. I'm not going to edit this. This is just for personal testing use. And a couple of people who wanted to hear it. The clinical vocabulary for the scientific word is the supposedly inoffensive, safe, superior dialect of medical professionals. Intercourse is appropriate and coitus is correct. Unfortunately, these words can be anything but sexy. Can you imagine lasciviously whispering, "I'd love to have intercourse with you," to a prospective partner? Can you imagine saying yes if someone asks if they can perform cunnilingus? Sorry, I had to grab some glasses. My eyes aren't as young as they used to be. Those words aren't yummy or sexy or a turn-on. Words used by authorities and professionals have great power for good or ill. They can help us recognize our normalcy, and they can also alienate us from our bodies. There's a wide variety of normal when it comes to people's anatomy and experience. Technical words that imply otherwise can contribute to people's all-too-common feeling that they're not normal. For instance, the term labia minora means small lips and refers to the inner lips of a woman's vulva. Sometimes these inner lips are big, though. In fact, not infrequently, they're bigger than the outer labia majora or big lips. If a medical practitioner uses labia majora with a woman who has large inner lips, it's easy for her to conclude she's abnormal. In addition to causing people to feel bad about themselves, some scientific words reflect millennia of sex-averse attitudes. When we uncover their root meanings, we find hidden negatives. One of my least favorite words is about one of my most favorite activities. The word is masturbation, which is derived from the Latin meaning to pollute your hand. That's certainly not what I'm doing when I pleasure myself. Are you? These clinical terms have other shortcomings too. For one thing, they can be an indirect way to stake out a power position. When an expert uses a term that a layperson does not understand, they're positioning themselves as the person in the know, and the other person is ignorant. Scientific jargon can also perpetuate ignorance. Telling someone they can, quote, get an STI if they perform fellatio and swallow the ejaculate, unquote, won't help if they don't know you just said you can get a sex disease from giving a blowjob and swallowing cum. The medical community also uses its own brand of prudish euphemisms that reflect its discomfort with the subject of sex. After a pregnant 15-year-old who had previously been denied being sexually active told me that she thought she couldn't get pregnant because, "I'm not sexually active, I just lie there," I stopped using that phrase. Sorry, text. Page 31. Huh? Where? Perhaps in your family you didn't even have a word for your genitals. Maybe you just had vague euphemisms, like down there. Where is that anyway? It sounds like they're talking about 19th century European concept of Africa, a dark, mysterious, faraway place where you'll probably never go. I guess that was the idea. If we don't name it, perhaps our darling child won't notice that they've got what they've got and will keep their exploring little hands out of their diapers. Fuzzy, ambiguous terms like doing it, hooking up, and your thing create a host of misunderstandings under their cloak of shame. Words like these make it difficult to describe boundaries, negotiate agreements, or request specific activities. And your mother. Finally, we're left with the so-called dirty words, those bad, excitingly forbidden, and racy slang terms for anatomy and sexual activities that we learned on the playground. dirty, bad. Excuse me, what's dirty about your amazing body parts or the arousing things you do with them? These taboo terms are prohibited phrases. Sorry, these taboo terms and prohibited phrases convey a clear message that sexuality is shameful and disgusting. It's interesting to note that we use these words to insult others. Calling someone a prick, asshole, cunt, or fuck is generally not considered a compliment. It's one more indicator of how we have culturally consigned our sexual activities to the shadows. We need to reclaim these dirty and bad words and make them clean and good. At the end of the day, it's no surprise that our cultural lexicon makes it virtually impossible to have straightforward, uncharged conversation about sex. What else can be expected from a society that's as confused and neurotic as ours about this topic? You're not broken. If your experience of your sexuality isn't all you wish it were, if you feel in any way inadequate or limited, ashamed of your desires, or embarrassed by your deficits, please listen carefully. It is not you who is broken. It isn't your fault that you haven't learned the skills you need to access your pleasure, own your orgasms, or heal your wounds. How many of us have been shamed for our lustful longings, secret fantasies, and private acts, rather than honored for our desires and celebrated for our ability to get turned on and ecstatic? We live in a world that not only doesn't support healthy sexuality, but actively undermines it, making you think there's something wrong with you or your partner. To repeat, you are not irreparably damaged, and you didn't get cheated when they handed out sexual potential. No matter where you are sexually, you can start on the path of progress by doing one simple thing, consciously deciding to set out on a learning journey. From that point on, things will get better. Over time, you'll learn to access your erotic abilities, overcome your inhibitions, and claim your authentic freedom. I'm going to skip a section here, move on to page 33. Women and sex. Throughout human history, the power accorded to women and prevailing attitudes about sexuality have been inextricably intertwined. In sex-positive societies, women and the power of the feminine were honored. Typically, we're talking about Eastern societies there. Indeed, women were considered especially divine as the source of life, capable of growing, birthing, and nourishing new things. These cultures balanced the power of men and women, just as they honored the energies and attributes of all genders. We do not live in a sex-positive world, and we can see the disastrous results all around us, including the ravaging of Mother Earth. Collectively, we can put an end to this. We can do this by starting on the individual level, by reconnecting our body, mind, heart, and spirit with our sexuality, and emerging from that process newly empowered. Orgasmic abundance is only one outcome of this. We can also access our wildness without transgressing our own or others' boundaries. We can create and sustain intimate relationships based on being in authentic connection with ourselves and with others. We can learn to heal and be in alignment with our power and our purpose. We can, in short, become whole. If we do this, if one by one we shift our consciousness in a direction that celebrates the erotic as holy, reveres both the feminine and masculine energies, and does a much better job of balancing male and female power, we will heal not only ourselves, but eventually the planet. This is why I sometimes tell people that my mission as a teacher is to save the planet one orgasm at a time. She goes on, but I think you get the idea. Anyway, hope you enjoyed it.